Welcome to the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. My name is Lauren Wells, here with my co-host, Chris Seveny. We're committed to providing you with the knowledge required to build wealth through real estate investing. Tired of consuming content about real estate? Stuck in analysis paralysis? Ready to do your first deal? As a member of our community, you will learn how to go from consuming content to taking that first step into the world of real estate investing. Our show is not about getting rich quick, but about providing you with the knowledge you need to take action. Join us as we speak with experienced investors who share action tips on how to escape the corporate world, start a thriving side hustle in the world of real estate, and go beyond your W-2 or 401k.
Welcome, everybody, back to another episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. I am your co-host, Chris Seveny. And today I have a special guest. I have Brock Mogensen with Smart Asset Capital. Brock, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Appreciate you having me on.
No problem. Today we are going to talk a little bit about Brock's background in real estate. And we're going to talk about the market a lot today and what Brock is seeing in the market, what we're seeing in the market. Question we get asked a lot. And a lot of people are out there wondering, are there deals in today's market? So we'll talk a little bit about that as well. So as we get started, Brock, why don't you tell us a little bit more about Smart Asset Capital, how you got into this business and what you got going on today?
Sure. Yeah. So I am based here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So living here, investing here, got started in real estate about 5 years ago. And I started with a duplex. So growing up, I saw my dad own two duplexes. Both my parents worked very blue collar jobs. And I saw simply what owning four units could do for your lifestyle. So growing up, I always kind of had that seed in my brain, like when I get out of college, I'm going to save up some money and buy a duplex. That was really the extent of what my real estate investing goals were. Bought that duplex, did the house hack model. First month, I had roommates renting out the other unit, make $500 that first month. I'm like, wow, this is the best business ever. How can I grow on this business and make it my full-time thing? So at the time, working in a call center, I was making like 40 grand a year. Didn't really have the income to grow quick, right? That path to me seemed like it was going to be a 20-year path for me to get making enough money to leave that job. So I started researching different avenues, wholesaling, flipping, all these different things, kind of experimenting in different avenues, and landed on this concept of syndication as my view of the easiest way and best way to scale into creating a large real estate business. So went all in on that. Fast forward 1 year after buying that duplex, find partners, I did education, did all the things, syndicated an 89 unit deal. So a year after that duplex, and then continued to do more and more. Fast forward a year or two later, I left my job and then was able to get to where we are today. So being a full-time investor, and right now we've done about 12 syndication deals. We're at 25 million assets under management and several different asset classes here in the Milwaukee area. And I'm loving it.
So I want to peel back a little bit because it sounds like you went pretty quickly into the syndication space in the raising money side of things. Did you do it 506B, 506C? And was it people you knew from your network, or did you have business partners along with this? Just curious. I'm intrigued about how you were able to scale so quickly, because that's amazing.
Yeah. So we've done 506B, and it's all in the beginning, really, I didn't have much connections, right? Like I really leaned on my first business partner, and my business partner still to this day, I have two business partners, but one of them had a ton of experience already, owned several hundred units, had built this real estate business already. So we came in, myself and other partner, with this knowledge of syndication and kind of saying, hey, we'll drive everything. We'll add this into your business model. And he really raised a lot of the capital on that first, provided a lot of the experience. And after a few more deals of doing it, I was able to build my own network. And now I take part in raising a lot of the capital as well. But that first one definitely leaned on having a partner with the experience. Cause obviously for me, I owned a duplex and read some books and went to a couple events. I know I wasn't super experienced, obviously. So it really leaned on having the right business partner to get those first couple ones done.
Great. So now, as part of your portfolio, because there's a lot of shifts going on in the markets and different things you mentioned earlier on, you're in different asset classes. What type of asset classes are you investing in today?
Yeah, we kind of went and taking a step back. I mean, so we started with multifamily, and then after that started, we got thrown this retail deal, the strip mall, an office building, a self-storage facility, industrial. So quickly, we just kept seeing these good deals and we're like, hey, it's a good deal, right? We can kind of learn how triple networks and do this deal. And those deals went well. But we recently, I'd say about a year and a half, 2 years ago, have been really focused on industrial. I think the past five deals we've done have been industrial. So that's been our main target right now, is value add industrial deals here in the greater Milwaukee area. So yeah, that's really our niche right now, is focusing on industrial. Okay.
So when you mention industrial, for me, I think of a lot of different aspects of industrial. Is there a specific use or site use that's being used for the industrial? Is it kind of like warehouse storage space or logistics, like an Amazon place? I'd love to learn this stuff. So that's correct. Just me using my own, using this time to educate myself.
Yep. So yeah, like you said, there's a lot of different niches or classes within industrial. For us, it's a lot of general warehouse, storage, light distribution, those sort of things. Just a big box, pretty much, right? Those are the ones we like the best. Some like flex space and that sort of stuff. We haven't really gotten into like heavy manufacturing. We have big cranes overhead. One day we may, but for now, it's a lot of just more general warehousing sort of asset classes.
Okay. And those typically leased like a triple net by the square foot, or how does that structure work on those types of deals?
Yes. So triple net, most of the ones we've done so far have been occupied, depending, right? So like several of the deals we've done have been short-term sale leasebacks, where we come in, we get it at a great price for square foot, great cap rate going in, but there might only be 2 to 3 years left on the lease. So there's more risk there for sure, right? Because when a tenant moves out of an industrial building, much harder to fill than when a tenant moves out of an apartment.
Yep.
So, but for us, that's how we create value within the industrial space. If a deal has a 10-year lease on it with an awesome tenant, those deals are going to trade at much lower cap rates and your return is just going to be much lower. Works for a lot of investors that are okay with just riding a 4 or 5% return for 10 years, hoping for appreciation. For us, we're more value add. So we tend to go for those deals that might have a little bit more risk, but we weigh in that risk with the upside and of course build in reserves and kind of protect our downside. But those have been the main deals we're focusing on, is some sort of short-term lease deals.
Okay. Cool. More education for me. My business partners are probably going to shoot me for asking these questions, because they're like, Chris, don't get this idea in the back of your head. Now, which I throw a lot of ideas out there, but we like to stay pretty target focused.
Yep.
Let's talk about why you made the shift into industrial. What were you seeing in the market that gave you that shift and led you to start moving the company in that direction?
Great question. So, and I would caveat that with saying we still like multifamily. Like, we're doing a development deal right now, 40 something apartments. So it's, we still like that asset class. But for us, I would say the big difference why we like it is just, it's more simple. With multifamily, there can be 50 different things that we have to come in and do to add value to this property, right? We got to rehab the units. We got to lease 100 units. We got to add additional income. We got to deal with 3 on-site property managers. There's a lot more moving pieces, which again, super lucrative asset class. But overall, the first part is we see industrial as it comes down to really one thing, the lease. Yep. There could be, you know, some CapEx stuff you have to deal with, but really it's that lease. And you just have to figure out that lease, get the property leased, or renew the lease on a longer term. And that's where your value is created. So we saw it as much more simpler business plan. Second off, I think just overall returns. I think in our market, at least, what we're seeing is cap rates on these multifamily assets in the A to B class, which is where we focus, is just, I literally just looked at a deal and it's negative 100,000 cash flow in the first year. And it's like really no value add. Just how do you make sense of these deals? Where with industrial, we're seeing more, so overall better returns, honestly, when we compare the two asset classes. So really those two things are the major drivers, which has led us to focus on industrial right now.
Yeah. You mentioned the multifamily space, which that's space I have a lot of background on in my past life. And I spent a lot of time underwriting deals back for the last 10, 20 years in multifamily. And we've looked at some recent multifamily deals, and with interest rate creep, cap rates kind of still not getting up to, not adjusting as interest rates have, and then just overall cost of utilities, labor, property management, renovation, construction, I'm having trouble penciling these things out. And I know there's still probably deals out there, but I'm just curious what you're seeing.
Totally right. I mean, I think deals are very hard to find right now. And I think investor expectations right now are like, they can't be the same as they were a few years ago, right? A few years ago, we could see 15 to 20% internal rate of returns. Those are the deals that are there right now. Right now, it's like you really have to push to find a good deal to hit 15%. And I think a lot of the bigger groups that are buying deals in like the higher growth, the Sun Belt areas, right? I mean, 10 to 12% internal rate of returns right now are really what you're seeing. And you have to be okay with coming in at a 2 or 3% cash on cash return, with, of course, value add deals are what most people are doing now, but it's tough. I mean, when you can go, like I have an account where I can store money in right now that makes 6% with no risk. So it's tough when you're competing against that and you really need to at least double that, right? To take on the additional risk of course, there's risk in real estate, right? Where with this money account, there's zero risk. So in my mind, I need to at least hit a double on that return compared to risk-free money. So it's tough to answer your quite long-winded answer, but to answer your question, it's tough right now to find deals.
Yeah. And we've seen some syndications we looked at and stuff. And when I start seeing people still offering 18 to 20% IRRs and stuff, I get a little more nervous because you're right. 3-4 years ago, that was kind of the norm. Today, I think economics have changed. And one of the things I think that has significantly changed that we're seeing in all aspects of real estate, a lot of areas I'm curious to see up in your neck of the woods is, I'll say, is the bid-ask spread, meaning the seller wants X and the buyer's only at Y. And every buyer is pretty much around that Y. And they may be seeking a cap of 8%, but the seller is just stubborn at 5% or whatever it is when the markets aren't dictating that. Are you seeing a lot of that up in your neck of the woods too?
For sure. Yeah, I feel like I personally haven't seen a lot of distress yet. Like maybe once or twice recently over the past month, I've seen a seller that's facing some distress where he could scoop this thing up, put a low ball offer in. But most of these deals I'm seeing, I talk to the broker and they're kind of like, yeah, the seller would sell. This is the price. They're not urgent to sell. I mean, that's kind of what I'm seeing when there's no distress, right? Of course. Yeah. We have a property right now that we would sell. I mean, I've sent it to a few people and it's kind of like, this is the price. And I know the price doesn't make sense. If you want to buy it, right? Like, we'll sell it to you. This is the price because we're not in distress on that asset right now. So it's, that's the tough part right now is most sellers are, they're willing to sell for the right price, but it doesn't really make sense. So I think until we hit that wave of, and who knows, is it this year, next year, is it ever that wave of distress? I mean, which I personally think there is something coming, but that's when I think it really starts making sense to scoop up deals. But all that being said, we have a deal in contract right now. There's still deals out there. So it's not like just sit back and wait. I think there's still deals that make sense. It's just a really, you have to get creative on the deal structure, get the right debt structures in place, and really just search for those diamonds in the rough.
We hope you're enjoying this episode of Creating Wealth Simplified. We wanted to take a moment and tell you more about our passive income fund at 7E, which is open to both accredited and non-accredited investors. Our latest offering targets an 8% annual return distributed monthly with the ability to potentially achieve a greater return through our bonus share program. If you'd like more information, reach out to us at invest@70investments.com to learn more. Thank you.
Yeah, it's much more challenging. If 5 years ago you would look at 50 deals and just say you closed on 5 of them as an example, you know, today to close on 5 deals, you're probably looking at 250 assets. Well, you're looking at a lot more to go through. Like you said, you got to get creative. You got to find some distress. I agree with you. I think we're probably a year away from starting to see more heartburn in the markets. I actually started a conspiracy theory the other day that we buy a lot of distressed mortgage loans. And the banks right now with what's going on in the commercial space, which I think everyone knows what's going on with in the commercial real estate. And I was joking with somebody. I said, I wonder if the banks are just going to go back for a bailout on everything because they're going to go back to the Fed and say, it's all your fault. I have all this paper at 3%. And basically now rates are at 7. So all these bonds, everything else I can't sell. My commercial real estate's collapsing. You know, we need a bailout basically to eliminate all their bad debt. And I'm like, it wouldn't surprise me actually with the banks to do something like that. Be pretty genius actually. Get taxpayers to pay them again like they did 15 years ago. But I digress. I apologize. So it's interesting, like you said, because same thing with us. We have assets in our portfolio that people reach out and we're like, well, we'll sell it, but here's the price. And we have some people who will buy it because they have the cash sitting on the sidelines that they'll still get a better return than just sitting it in a CD. And so, but we're spending a lot more time chasing deals than I'd like to be frank.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think there's, like you said, there's certain buyers that it makes sense to overpay, right? Like you get 1031 money, right? When you're weighing in the tax hit, it could make sense. Other investors that are just sitting on a lot of cash that want the tax benefits, that want the long-term appreciation, right? So it's competing against that market, right? And that's always been a factor in real estate investing. Of course, that those investors have always been there. But I think those are a lot of buyers I'm seeing now, just talking to brokers and seeing the deals they're transacting are people like that, that have to place their money somewhere and they need to do it now, that are paying the prices that a lot of offers are out there for right now.
Yeah. And to be honest, that scares me when I see people doing that, because I think, like you mentioned, I'm anticipating that are going to see some type of plateau leveling off and some type of coming back to reality, especially on the residential side. Because the way I look at the residential market, it shot up so much from COVID that the average Jane and John Doe can't afford a home. And rents have gotten so outrageous. Tack on the fact that a lot of Americans are awful at financial planning and management and have no savings. Eventually, something's got to give. And it's either going to be, they're going to need something, and you're going to have a significant increase in defaulted credit card and other types of debt or rents, or housing's going to have to come back to some reality for people. I mean, some of these places where it was a $200,000 house, now it's $350,000 plus your interest rate's gone from 3, which is, I think, absurdly low. I'm used 5 and 6 when I bought my first house. Now up to 7%, you know, that payment is probably doubled. So I don't know where all this money's coming from.
Crazy. Yeah. I mean, that's the hardest part right now. And plus banks, I mean, on commercial lending right now are just pulling back so much, like even at the 7.5%, just got a 7.5% quote on the interest rate. I mean, it's, they're even pulling back on that, right? And requiring additional reserves and holding back not as much interest only. I mean, there's just so many different things that are making it so hard to do deals right now. So I agree with that.
Yeah. As part of the underwriting process, what are you seeing for, you know, I think you mentioned you got a deal under agreement, and like from a structure standpoint of how much leverage are you able to get? What type of term is that? What's a ballpark interest rate on that? I'm just curious what's out there today.
Yeah. So this kind of going high level to the deal right now. I mean, so generally we're targeting 75% leverage. The interest rate rise, I mean, we're somewhere around 7%. Okay. That's kind of the ballpark we're in right now on that. Mm-hmm. But I would say the harder part too within the industrial space is some of these lease term deals, like the one we got right now, it's a 2-year sale leaseback, right? And there's, yeah, we have an opportunity to add value after that, right? Below market rents, buying at a great dollar per square foot, great story behind the deal. But from a bank's perspective, of course, we like it, right? We can add value to it. Year 3 or 4, like we can, the bank sees it as, I have a tenant in there for 2 years. Who knows what's going to happen in year 3? You might have a vacant building on their hand. So they look at us, right? Like, you guys are going to have to be the ones personally liable for the mortgage payments. We're strong enough to cover that, but it's a little bit, it's a riskier asset from the bank's perspective compared to a deal that has a 10-year lease on it or a stabilized apartment building, right? It's a little bit, it makes it extra tough right now within the space we're navigating to get great debt terms. So that's really where having good relationships with debt, I think, whether you have a great mortgage broker, work with someone that has someone with great local banks, we have some good connections here that we work with. So it's really just leaning on those people we've worked with for years and have good relationships with and have shown, hey, we can navigate through tough times. We're not going to default. I think that's super key right now is that's the hardest part right now.
Yeah. It blows my mind still how banks or lenders still, some of them just will still give non-recourse debt. So I was working for a large family office that owned a lot of real estate, and they had significant loans on assets, but they also had, they're only probably 30% loan to value of the assets. So they clearly had plenty of equity in all their deals, and they still had recourse debt on everything. And they were getting money from insurance companies and other places and stuff, but everything was recourse. So even though their balance sheet was probably the strongest balance sheet I've ever seen for a real estate developer. And we'll do some private lending and everything we do. First thing we tell people is, hey, this is recourse, just letting you know right up front. And if that's so it's surprising to me sometimes when I still see some of the non-recourse debt, and I'm curious how that shakes out different things. But for people listening, especially today, it's not uncommon. I mean, a lot of people make it sound like it's uncommon to have recourse debt. It's not, especially if it's an asset that poses a little bit more risk, because giving a loan is all about balancing the risk versus a reward in return.
Agreed. Yeah, I think we've, out of the 12 deals we've done, 11 out of 12 of them have been with local banks and full recourse. The first deal we did, that 89 unit, was we did agency debt. Okay. Had a pretty rough experience just with agency, and we got hit pretty hard with COVID at that property. And they just, you call them and there's zero, they don't want, like, they're not going to help you, right? Like, they're not your friend. They're not going to really bend over to help you at all because they have such government regulation. Whereas with local banks, right, if something goes wrong, I know they got a call, right? I golfed with them last week, and they're going to navigate through with it. They're not just going to like hand it over to you, but they're going to, they'll find something, right? They need to restructure it or work with you to get to make both sides happy. So to me, that's a big benefit is, and I think when you get to a certain scale, like, of course you go bigger, agency debt, non-recourse, all that stuff. But the space we're navigating right now, we found is local banks have been the best source of debt for us.
So you mentioned on some of these deals with the value adds can be a little more challenging with the financing. What are some of the things you've done to overcome that hurdle in regards to, you know, does it require more equity in the deal? Or I'm just curious, what were some of the things that you did to overcome that?
Good question. Yeah. So we've gotten, I'd say that the biggest one we're doing is just giving more cash to the banks, and not necessarily even on a leverage standpoint, just from reserves. Like we'll put $100,000 in their bank account. And they can hold on to it for, to cover that potential year of vacancy. Right. And if once we exit or whatever, we get through that period, they'll refund it. So that's been the biggest thing I think we've been leaning on, is we'll stack in more reserves, whether they hold it or we stack it in our account, to give the bank more certainty that, hey, we have the cash to weather that year vacancy period that we assume. Just really highlighting, like, a big thing, and it's a little tangent, but is, I think historically, like when I first started, right, it was like, it was easy to get financing. Like we'd send it out to five banks and like they'd be fighting over it. It'd just be a matter of, do we want 3 or 3.25% interest rate?
Yep.
So it's like you really have to be dialed on like how you present this deal to the bank. So we put together like a detailed investment summary that highlights everything about the deal, how we're mitigating risk, everything. We send that professionally to each banker. So I think a lot of times, just had this conversation last week with a banker where he got, someone was asking for financing and he got 50 different emails and 50 different spreadsheets. And like, he had to spend 20 hours piecing all this together to see if the deal works. So I think it's especially important right now to just make it easy for them to make a decision, lay it all out in one PDF, everything they need to know about the deal, so they can just scroll through that and understand what the deal has going on. So that's something we're really focusing on, is just getting creative. We're doing whatever we can to make the banks happy and presenting it in a professional manner.
Yeah, no, that's a great point you make, because the presentation is key today. Because like you said, banks were literally handing money out like a lemonade stand on the corner of the street. And now banks have seriously tightened their belts in regards to a commercial. We had somebody reach out to us for a private loan. They had a commercial debt. It was commercial office. It was like townhouse style office building that they had 90% leased. Appraisal came in at like $2.6 million and his debt was maturing. It was a maturity default, and he basically had a balloon of about $600,000. Yeah. The bank would not give him a new loan, even though it had great cash flow, even though it had tons of equity. They're just like, nope, we're not lending on this type of product anymore. We had spoken to him about potentially a short-term private loan to pay it off till he could refinance it. He didn't like the terms of that, but he ended up actually refinancing his house to pull the money out of his house to pay for that property. But yeah, I mean, anything commercial today, is make sure you speak with several lenders, because the amount of equity you're probably gonna have to put in this deal, like you said, the reserves, everything, debt service credit ratios, people are happy with a 1 or 1.1. If you see anything below 1.2 today, be still surprised. There might be some lenders out there possibly, but I'd probably target 1.2 on that standpoint.
For sure. Yeah. I think also just like we were talking about the guarantees perspective too, like having strong balance sheet, strong liquidity, you know, strong net worth, all of those things, track record history, right? If there's a bank that you've worked with for a long time and you've performed well with them, those sort of things go a long way. Right now, I think for the newer investor that doesn't have all those things, it's even extra tough right now. It's not impossible, right? It's still possible, but it just really requires having a great relationship and having all your pieces in a row.
Yep, absolutely. So Brock, as we wrap up this episode, I'd like to ask you a question of, you mentioned that agency debt story and so forth. I was going to ask you, what has been kind of your biggest lesson learned, headache, hair pulling situation that you've had in your 5 years here in this lovely world of real estate?
Yeah, I would say, to be honest, we just filmed a podcast about this whole thing, so it's kind of top of mind. The first syndication deal we did, that 89 unit apartment building, a lot of learning lessons on that one. I mean, we, starting off with the debt, as we talked about, right? And we got the mortgage broker we worked with on that, kind of screwed us over last minute and like promised the world to us, and that completely changed last minute. So going into this deal, we're in a rough spot. You know, I'll go quick through this story, but essentially we had to evict 60% of the tenants right away. We get all that figured out. And then COVID hits and 25% of our tenants don't pay rent for 2 years. Stack that on top with an $80,000 boiler that goes out. So we were in a rough spot, right? We personally, myself and two, we didn't want to do a capital call. So we put $100,000 down to cover that.
Yep.
And then Luckily, we found the right buyer for the property, exited that property, were able to negotiate the prepayment penalty and get out of it with a profitable return to investors. A lot of unlucky things, but a lot of learning lessons too, just regarding due diligence. Mm-hmm. Biggest one being for us as a firm, we don't want to buy stuff in rough locations, I'll just say. Really focusing on what sort of tenant base we're supporting and factoring that into the numbers. C class, C minus class property, or I don't care if the performer says you're going to operate that property to 50% expense ratio, you're not going to. It's going to be 60%, 65%. So things like that, where we just, a lot of learning lessons, right? It was our first big syndication deal we did. So I'd say that was the biggest one where we took a lot of those things, luckily got out of it profitable, but took that and then made sure we don't repeat those mistakes again.
Yeah, a few things I take from that. One is the commitment that you made in regards to the capital call and putting your own money in the deal back in. I think that shows a lot too. And that would be something like if I had to do, I'd probably let the investors know, hey, the property's not going well. We, as the owners, are putting this in. We're not asking for a capital call. I think that goes a long way, especially in today's environment where every time I go on LinkedIn or in some groups I'm in, either distributions are cut or capital calls are happening left and right, especially those individuals who have bridge debt is on a floating rate, because a lot of those people, unfortunately, are getting hurt pretty bad in that. But no, it's like anything in real estate, you're constantly learning and you can never learn enough. You just have to make sure that, you know, if you have a lesson learned, that that's the only time you learn that lesson and you don't try and repeat it.
100%. I agree. It's always, you learn everything, right? And learning never stops. That's for sure.
Brock, if people want to reach out, learn more information about Smart Asset Capital, it's the best way for them to reach out and learn more about you.
Yes, so our website is smartassetcapital.com. Have some different downloads and you can book calls through there. Instagram, I'm pretty active on there. That's just my first and last name, at Brock Mogensen. Email is brock@smartassetcapital. So yeah, feel free to reach out. Happy to talk with anyone.
Yep. And we'll have, of course, all this information in the show notes. Brock, thanks for joining us today on this episode of Creating Wealth Simplified. And for everyone listening, please make sure to like and subscribe to us on your favorite listening station. Thank you all. Take care.
Thank you for joining Lauren and I on this episode of the Creating Wealth Simplified podcast. Each week, we bring you expert education, experience, and information in a digestible format to help you identify investment opportunities so you can build wealth through real estate and take action toward your financial goals. Enjoy the show. Share with a friend or subscribe to the show and leave us a review.